You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today, I am joined by Steve Fetch as we go over the last few weeks of college basketball for the Kansas Jayhawks. Maybe we'll throw in a few other things to kind of go in there. But we did take a little bit of a break at the end of the year for the holidays. So I hope everybody had a very happy holidays. Happy New Year to everyone. So Fetch, how are you doing today in this brand new year?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I partied a little bit too hard last night. I think I'll be okay. I'll just need, you know, I spent most of the day recovering. I didn't wake up until about 3 o'clock this afternoon. So, I'm actually feeling pretty good for this point right now. So, all right.
Perfect.
So obviously, yeah. What about you?
I'm an old man, so, I can't really, get it going like I did in my 20s anymore, but, didn't make it past midnight. So that was nice. Just kind of a, you know, nice low key night with friends. Clearly, apparently didn't have quite the shindig that you did, but it was fun and a good way to kick off 2020, I think.
Yeah, I went out to the local amusement park and enjoyed myself just a little bit too much, I think. Had the kids out there too, though, so we didn't do anything too crazy. It's just really, really loud and lots of stuff going on. So, all right, so let's jump into this. I don't want to take a huge long time on this particular episode of the podcast today, and we have quite a bit to cover, so let's jump into the first game. The first game being that Villanova game where Kansas lost by one against the Villanova Wildcats on the road. I wanted to get your kind of overall impressions of that game because I had a lot of thoughts coming out of that game, but I'm not really sure what is, you know, actually like what we should actually be worried about and what we actually could build on from there.
Yeah, I think the first thing that stands out to me is, you know, Villanova is kind of uniquely built to beat a team like this Kansas team. You know, they got a lot of guys who can shoot, and we saw that they got a lot of shots off. They took 41 threes. But I think, you know, Kansas did a pretty good job of making a lot of those threes. You know, someone guarded. I think they did a pretty good job closing out. For the most part, obviously, they gave up some open ones, which is, you know, going to happen when a team shoots that many of them and when you're playing both Udoka Azubuike and David McCormick big minutes together. So that's kind of the first thing. I think the other thing is, you know, I was really disappointed with how Devon Dotson played. Three turnovers in the game, 4 of 13 shooting from two, you know, 1 of 2 from the three-point line, which was, you know, nice, although I think he passed up some open threes. And then 4 of 7 from the free throw line was pretty disappointing as well. He missed a couple of big ones late. Obviously, he missed the potential game-winning shot, which was not the worst look in the world, but also had that play with about a minute left when he was kind of casually handling the ball up top and got it stripped by Colin Gillespie. And just didn't think he played very well on either end of the floor. I think, you know, Colin Gillespie had a pretty bad offensive game, but I think a lot of that was just more to, you know, his deficiencies more so than anything that Dotson specifically did. So just those two things combined, I think, were pretty disappointing. But if you look at the positive aspects of that, you know, Villanova needed all of that just to win by a point at home, and Villanova's a pretty darn good team. So I don't think it's going to be too often that Kansas is going to give up that many threes. You know, obviously teams shoot a lot of threes, but you know, they're probably not going to have teams take 2/3 of their shots from behind the arc against them very often. And more importantly, I don't think you're going to get that many bad games from Devon Dotson. So if it takes all that to beat Kansas, in Kansas's first true road game, I think we can come away feeling overall pretty positive about the direction of this year's team, even though the performance in that game specifically wasn't exactly what we want.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with anything that you said there. You know, I think the thing that jumped out to me is that Villanova took over three times as many three-point attempts as Kansas did in this game. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that Kansas was playing too big for the vast majority of the game. And, of course, the reason for that is that Marcus Garrett got injured in this one really early. He only played 13 minutes in the game. Well, so, I mean, I guess really early isn't – it was more than halfway through the first half. But it was much earlier, I think, than they would have, really been able to want to go to anything like a two big lineup. And they played a two big lineup for a large portion of this game, not because they wanted to, but because they really had to for a good portion of the game. They played Enrun as much as possible, but he had some issues in terms of being effective at various times, and he ended up playing 21 minutes. So, they definitely counted on him to fill in some of that, but when you're not used to guys like Enruna and Brown playing a lot, it's hard to just throw them in there immediately when someone gets injured like that. And so they went to the guys that they were more comfortable with in playing big roles, and it just didn't mesh. So, to have a guy who's such an integral part of your team go down that early, overcome that, get outshot by three times in terms of three-pointers, still hold that team to, they only shot 24% from three, which is an atrocious number, but you knew that Villanova knew that they were going to have to just keep chucking up three-pointers because with two bigs on the floor, they weren't really getting anything at all inside. They went, 12 of 22 on the inside, but that was mainly because, if I remember correctly, a lot of that came towards the end of the game when Kansas was overcommitting at the three-point line because they were just throwing so many three-pointers up, they had to do something to kind of stop the onslaught. But really, I think what it just comes down to, and it shows you, is that when this team is missing that much, they still found a way to almost win that game against a ranked team on the road who is a really good team. Villanova is a good team this year. There are no great teams, I don't think, in college basketball this year. I think Kansas is honestly the closest that we have to one, and they definitely have some very clear issues to still work out. But it shows just how good of a defensive team this is. They lost this game 56-55 after losing one of their better defenders, and they were still able to keep it at such a low score.
Yeah, and I think you made a good point with the Marcus Garrett stuff. I think it's, pretty clearly the case that they would have won if he would have been able to play his full complement of minutes. One thing that I guess I forgot to mention with Dotson's, bad game was that game-winning three by Villanova. I think it was by Cole Swider. I don't have the play-by-play up, but just, going off memory, just some real unnecessary help where he just kind of sucked off his man, and it was an easy, one pass away type thing. Didn't even have to throw like a skip pass. Didn't need multiple passes. Didn't even really need much of penetration into the lane. I can't even remember who was handling the ball or who was guarding him at this point, to be honest with you, but didn't even really, get past the KU defender and Dotson just with some unnecessary overhelp. And that's the kind of stuff that I think really needs to get fixed when you're helping off the ball or off your man one pass away to guard the ball handler. I mean, that's part of what, Bill Self does and part of what he, subscribes to. His defensive philosophy is, no easy buckets. Don't let him get a free layup, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, you got to know your time. You got to know your time and score, the situation and all that stuff. KU up by two. Doesn't really make a lot of sense to suck off and give up an open three when you can, give up what probably would have been a pretty difficult two-point attempt, especially given, who Kansas has in the lane backing up those perimeter defenders. So, they broke down a little bit, which is going to happen in your first road game. But like I said, I mean, if it takes all that to beat Kansas on the road, tough not to be optimistic overall.
Right. And, there were two main things I think that – well, three main things that I took away from this game. And we'll talk about them each in order. But the first one being that, the second half of the game, Kansas came out not so great the second half. They scored that first bucket. And actually, it looks like they traded a couple buckets back and forth. But remember, there was a stretch where Villanova went on a run, you know, got up by 8 points, 35-27. And, you know, when you're down your best defender in Marcus Garrett and, you know, are struggling and having issues going and teams go on a run, I think previous Kansas teams, you know, probably would have let that get a little bit out of hand. I know last year's team would have, for sure. And then they probably might have been able to claw back, you know, eventually to get close and maybe make a game of it at the end. But, like, we didn't see this get to a double-digit deficit for them. It got to 8. Kansas called a timeout, if I remember correctly. No, actually, they didn't, because this was right after a timeout with the free throws. And then Kansas goes on a little bit of a run themselves to go ahead and pull it back and actually take the lead at this point, you know, just a few minutes later. Let me see. I'm trying to get the actual time of it. You know, Kansas went ahead and finally took the lead again when Devon Dotson made a three-pointer to go up 44-43. So that was about 5 minutes later in the game. You know, but the fact that they were able to battle back and come back and then take that lead, you know, I think that was a huge point for this team that, you know, pretty much nothing was going their way in this game, and yet they were still able to battle back and make a game of it. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, you look at the game and you look at just kind of the per 10-minute segment type deal, it's very, very similar. You know, Kansas won the first 10-minute segment 14-9. Villanova came back and won the second segment 14-9 to make it tied at halftime. And then, you know, it was tied again after the end of the next 10 minutes. But within those, you know, 10-minute frames, there's a lot of back and forth, a lot of, you know, Kansas has a 6 to an 8 point lead and then Villanova does. And, you know, you're right. Villanova went on that little 10-0 run, kind of to start the second half, really looked like they were just going to kind of pull away from there, but, you know, Kansas clawed back and it started, you know, defensively. Villanova went, you know, 5 minutes and scored looks like 4 points. So, I mean, it starts with defense of this team, and I think that that's something that this year's team has that last year's team didn't. And I think, you know, a big function of that is, you know, not only having more lengthy perimeter guys, you know, you got Tristan Anaruna, you got Christian Brown, both of whom are playing pretty good defense. Obviously, Marcus Garrett, but, you know, you've got those three guys rather than, you know, Quentin Grimes and you know, I think KJ Lawson would have been a pretty good defender, but he didn't really get the chance to show it. But, you know, Charlie Moore wasn't a very good defender. So you just have more good perimeter defenders to throw out there. And then you got a healthy Udoka Azubuike where there's just no easy baskets inside. So when you have that defensive backbone where, you know, teams really need to get red hot from beyond the arc to stretch things out against you rather than being able to just continue over and over and over again against you. Even if your offense is struggling, even if, you know, some other stuff isn't going your way, teams aren't really going to be able to pull away too much against you. And so that's something where I think we're probably not going to see a lot of games this year, even when teams are shooting well from three. I mean, you saw the Dayton game where we're, you know, obscenely hot against Kansas in the first half from three, and it was a pretty close game in halftime. And so, you know, when you got that defensive ability and when you've got a guy like Udoka Azubuike who you can just kind of dump it into for a free basket, kind of almost whenever you want to, teams aren't ever really going to be able to pull away from you too much.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So the other big thing I think to come out of this, at least for me, was just how much Marcus Garrett means to this team. Because what I noticed is when he went out, the offense, you know, like we know that they're really good defensively. He's a very good defender, and he helps with that defense. But I was surprised by how much the offense seemed to struggle for quite a while after he went out. It took them a long time to find their footing. And it leads me to believe that he plays a much bigger role, I think, in facilitating good shots. Like, it's not Devon Dotson that is the guy that's creating shots for people. It's Devon Dotson playing off of Marcus Garrett. And Garrett is actually, I think, the main facilitator for this team. I think that this game really highlighted that just because of how much struggle they did have and how difficult it was for Devon Dotson to put the team in good situations and get plays run. Do you think I'm onto something there, or am I oversimplifying it?
No, I think you're totally right. Dotson still has the best assist rate on the team, but not by a ton. I think probably more of more of Garrett's possessions where he's actually kind of trying to make a play result in him making a play than Dotson, which is kind of counterintuitive. I definitely think he's the best passer on the team. It certainly looks like his ball handling has improved. Obviously, his three-point shot has improved. I mean, obviously, super small sample size, but he's up to 37% on the year, and I think a lot of that is obviously he's getting wide-open standstill looks or wide-open catch-and-shoot looks, whereas pretty much everyone else on the team is being guarded a lot more heavily beyond the arc. But that just opens things up spacing-wise. It makes teams, you know, somewhat respect his shot a little bit more, and we've seen that he's a good enough ball handler now, and he's quick enough to get by those guys, and he's pretty strong. He doesn't really look like it, you know, he's kind of got that like thin, wiry frame, but when he gets into the lane, he can score through guys, and he's shooting 71% from the line, so when he gets fouled, he's got a pretty good opportunity to get some extra points at the free throw line. So you know, I think all that combined, you're right. I mean, he's a pretty darn good offensive player. And I think one thing too is, you know, we've mentioned this a lot over the course of the year. You've got, you know, the other team's best or, you know, one of their best perimeter defenders is going to be on Devon Dotson. Obviously, the game plan is going to be to take away Udoka Azubuike. And so that leaves, you know, maybe a lesser defender on Marcus Garrett, and not a lot of college basketball teams have like three really good defenders. So you're going to have a Marcus Garrett, you know, being guarded by a guy who's probably not good enough to guard him. But when you take him away, you know, those guys can maybe guard, you know, Ochai Agbaji, who is a really good player, but not the ball handler that Marcus Garrett is. And, you know, same with Isaiah Moss, and, you know, Anaruna and Christian Brown aren't there yet in terms of ball handling and probably having the freedom to kind of freelance like Marcus Garrett does. So taking him away, probably not as important offensively as defensively, but honestly, probably right there, just given the strides that he's made in that area over the course of the last year.
Yeah, I think it also, you know, you gain a lot more by having his ball handling there and his ability to facilitate when he's going up against, you know, that third tier defender or the third best defender. He can take advantage of, you know, because when we're talking about perimeter defenders, we're not just talking about the ability to stop a guy from shooting. We're talking about the ability of a guy to either get his own shot or to open up a shot for someone else. And Marcus Garrett is much better equipped to take advantage of that than a guy like Ochai Agbaji is, I think. And so, right, when you then get that next best defender off of Marcus Garrett and onto Agbaji, it makes it a little bit harder for Agbaji to fill in where Garrett wasn't there and things like that. Garrett, I think, is very well equipped to facilitate, you know, based off of any kind of lapses defensively that the other team might have at that point. So, all right, I did have one more point I wanted to make about this game, but it kind of feeds into the next game, and we do need to go to a quick break, so I'm going to throw it to that real quick. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
And we're back. Okay, so the next point, or the last point that I had for the Villanova game, I think feeds into the Stanford game because of the player that I am talking about, and that would be Christian Brown. I think he really had, towards the end of that game especially, a kind of a breakout. And I forget who it was that I was listening to, but I heard someone else kind of talk about this. And Bill Self has a very clear pattern of not playing freshmen very much until, you know, he can actually feel like he can trust them on the court. And of course, the only way that they get to do that is if they actually get to play for him for an extended period of time on the court. Anaruna had that earlier this year, and Self was kind of okay going to him. And then Anaruna cooled off a little bit, and now he's not playing as much. Christian Brown really had that opportunity in the Villanova game, played very strongly for the end of that game, and then turned that into a significant appearance in the Stanford game where he scored 9 points and had a very good game against Stanford. So do you think that this is a case of, you know, while it was not ideal to lose that game against Villanova, and I'll never say that, you know, it's good to lose a game, that overall this might actually be better for the team because it gave Christian that opportunity to kind of show what he can do and give them then another option that Bill Self can trust down the stretch?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I always admired about Roy Williams and continue to admire about Roy Williams as the coach at North Carolina is he plays a lot of guys in you know, this December, January period to kind of learn, you know, who has the right stuff type deal, you know, and then he narrows down his rotation later in the year. And that's something that I kind of always thought that Bill Self should do a little bit more than he does. And I think he did it a little bit more in the past. I think he's kind of started to narrow his rotation earlier the, you know, the last couple of years. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, to tie it to Braun specifically, played really well in the Villanova game, had that late block and then that, you know, and one on the other end, 3-for-4 from three, in the Stanford game. That was a, we'll get to it, I'm sure, but pretty forgettable game all around, but, up to 39% from three, which, I didn't realize. It seemed like he certainly was not shooting the ball well. And before I looked up his numbers, I was prepared to tell you, you know, hey, a shot looks good. It's just not falling right now, but, the shot looks good and it's falling apparently. You know, and I think he's doing the other stuff, really well as well, not really turning it over, contributing on defense. All in all, just kind of has been the player that, you know, we expected, him to be, you know, after watching those first two exhibition games, really, you know, making the right pass, making the right play, not trying to do too much. But you're right. I think, you know, the fact that he was able to get that playing time, and I think he should keep getting more playing time. And I think Anaruna should get more playing time as well, until Bill Self starts to kind of, you know, narrow that rotation down like he's going to need to do, over the course of the next couple of months. You're right that it's losing is never good, but I think you'd probably sacrifice a loss in December, to Villanova, in order to maybe pick up a couple extra wins in Big 12 play, and certainly to pick up a couple extra wins in March.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's really what it comes down to is that, you know, once Marcus Garrett got injured, that was going to be, honestly, I think a tough game for them to win anyway, just because of, like we talked about, how much, you know, he means to them. And so if you can get something positive out of that game, I, you know, realizing that it probably is going to be a loss at least more than half of the time, like, I would rather take the loss and have another guy that when we need him down the stretch, we know we can go to him and Bill Self is going to be comfortable using him, and he's going to have the confidence of knowing that he's going to, you know, that he has the ability to play well in game situations, then, you know, we lean heavily on the guys that he did trust, not really throw Christian in there, and then don't have that down the stretch. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess I don't want to keep repeating myself, but so instead, let's go ahead and turn to the actual Stanford game itself. Obviously, Brown did kind of take a little bit of a step back there. Well, not even really a step back. You know, he played of the guys that aren't in the main rotation, which I'm not counting McCormick to be in the main rotation, in terms of getting the most minutes, because he seems to waffle somewhere between 10 to 13 minutes a game typically. And that was true to form in this game, even though he was a starter. You know, so outside of the main five being Azubuike, Garrett, Dotson, Abaji, and Moss, Brown played the most minutes and was the most productive, out of all of them. But I think, honestly, that the story of this game has to be how well Stanford locked down Kansas inside and then how well the team was able to overcome that to get a big win. Do you agree that that's the biggest story, or was there something else that I'm missing?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. You talk about, you know, them locking down Kansas inside and they still shot, you know, 50% from two. You know, you're right, though. I mean, that kind of is, you know, locking them down comparatively speaking. Udoka only had two actual field goal attempts. He got five free throws and stuff. But, he didn't really have a, you know, a great game scoring wise, but obviously, you know, impacted the game in other ways, you know, most notably the offensive rebounds. I think we're probably going to see that a little bit more where teams start swarming whichever big man gets the ball on the catch. And we see that every so often. I think maybe just kind of an off game from Azubuki. Usually he's a little bit better passer than he showed on Sunday. But I do think one thing that's nice about what they did, and Kansas didn't shoot a ton of threes. I mean, they shot about 30-something percent of their shots from three, but certainly more than they usually do. Showed that they can adapt, you know, showed that, you know, hey, they're really taking away our inside game. Let's shoot some more threes. And it's pretty ugly early. I mean, there was a couple of possessions there where they, I think, went 0 for 3 from 3 on the same possession, but finished shooting, you know, over 40% from three. And hey, if Kansas is going to shoot over 40% from three, it's pretty much over. You can kind of forget about beating them on that day. I think personally the big story was the turnovers, just overall. I suppose that probably ties in with the whole, you know, shutting them down inside. But, you know, you can live with, you know, I think guys like, you know, Marcus Garrett turning it over three times. I think you can even live with Azubuki turning it over five times. But I mentioned this on Twitter. You can't really, you know, guys like, you know, David McCormick, I don't think you can really live with him turning it over three times in 11 minutes. Tristan Anaruna, you know, only twice, but in only 11 minutes. Even Abaji, you know, three times, even though he played 33 minutes. Rate-wise, you know, Abaji, that's not terrible, but he's not a ball handler. You know, he's a catch-and-shoot guy. He's a catch, you know, on the run, cutting into the lane, you know, trying to score over someone type guy. Obviously, McCormick and Anaruna are more ancillary guys. You can't turn the ball over when you're, you know, not one of the main ball handlers. That's just gonna kill Kansas. Really, the turnovers has been the only thing that is keeping them from being an elite offense this season. 50% from two, 40% from three. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say to kind of argue against that a little bit though is, you know, I do think that a lot of that was just how strong that Stanford played down low, and they have a little bit more size down low than most teams Kansas have played this year. I don't think they were quite ready for how much Stanford was committed to just stopping everything down low as much as possible. Like McCormick and Azubuike, you know, that was the result, I think, directly of pressure that they weren't expecting. You know, and then like Anaruna's turnovers were when he was down in the post. DeSouza had a turnover down in the post. Abaji, I think, had one turnover when he was driving into the post where there were some guys ready for him. Just things that I don't think that they've seen defensively before when, you know, kind of going up against. And so it caught them by surprise, especially early in the game. And, you know, I think that first half is where a lot of that really kind of got out of hand. It was really ugly in the first half for both teams, you know, which is a big credit to Kansas defense. But you're right that the turnovers were not ideal. But the way that they came initially, I thought, was kind of the big story and why I'm not necessarily too worried about it, because it was a lot of, you know, things that they weren't necessarily ready for. Now that they've seen it, Bill Self is going to have them a little bit better prepared for it if it were ever happen again. They've now seen it in a game. They're going to recognize it, I think, a little sooner, be able to handle it a little bit better. And, I mean, this is another one of those, you know, they've got a lot of really good teaching stuff to come out of this, because this is something, a way that they can improve their game that they, you know, probably wouldn't have had if they didn't play a team like Stanford who tried to attack them in this way. So, ultimately, yeah, it's a little concerning now. I will be more concerned if they run into a similar type of defensive effort from one of their Big 12 opponents, and then have a similar sort of game there, because then that means that what everyone's going to start doing then is to try to shut them down low and hope that it disrupts the rest of everything that they do. I think that they're going to learn from this well enough. I'm not concerned about it yet, but I can definitely see where it might get someone concerned if it continues again. Now, that being said, you know, they have to find a way for guys like McCormick and Azubuike to get some sort of production. Yes, Azubuike helped a lot offensively, but if they're not going to have the shot down low, they have to be able to kick it out a whole lot faster, kind of open things up for mid-range jumpers, which that was how Kansas shot, you know, over 50% from two, or nearly 50% from two. I don't actually have my normal stats up, so I can't tell what that actual two-point percentage was. But, you know, it was a lot of it was kind of those mid-range jumpers that you don't typically like to see teams taking. But in this case, it actually made sense because Stanford was selling out so much down low that if you're going to get a two-point shot, it was going to have to be a mid-range jumper. and it kind of left them a little bit more open for those than you normally would see.
Yeah, they shot exactly 50% from two, actually, 18 for 36. I think just to, you know, it's pretty clear at this point they don't really have a ton of secondary ball handling. I mean, it's basically Devon Dotson and Marcus Garrett. No one else is really a great ball handler. I think Christian Brown might get there eventually. He seems to have kind of the third best handles among the perimeter guys, but probably not someone you want to really be depending on to be a main distributor. But it just, to me, it just comes back to, you know, you can live with the turnovers from your couple main guys, but any possessions that are devoted to your, I guess, ancillary guys, for lack of a better word, they just have to end in a shot attempt. I mean, they can't turn the ball over. And yeah, I mean, I am a little bit worried that some of these, you know, teams are going to sell out to force turnovers, because that is the way to stop this Kansas team. I mean, it's forcing ball pressure on Udoka Azubuike. It's forcing ball pressure on David McCormick whenever he catches the ball. And if teams are consistently able to do that, not that they're going to shut Kansas down, but I think that you're going to see them ugly up a few more games than we'd like to see, and might be in a few more dogfights than maybe we'd like to be, because of their refusal to shoot threes and you know, their inability to shoot them well so far this year. I mean, they're not a bad shooting team, obviously, but certainly not the 2017 or 2018 teams where they can just, you know, blow you out by a three-pointer.
True. All right, well, I don't want to end the Stanford game on a down note, because I think the big positive from this game was just how suffocating that defense was. I mean, Stanford didn't make a field goal until essentially the under eight timeout in the first half. You know, it was absolutely ridiculous just how good that defensive effort was. How much of that was Stanford just shooting cold, and how much of it was Kansas blanketing them completely?
I mean, you know, as always, I think mixture of both. Stanford certainly missed some open looks, but I think Kansas did a pretty good job for the most part at forcing them into tough looks, even tough three-pointers. And, you know, when you're forcing teams into a lot of tough three-pointers and then all of a sudden you got an open one, I think you're maybe going to grip the ball a little bit tighter and you know, feel a little bit more pressure to make the rare open one that you get. So probably a mixture of both. I think it helped too that while Stanford has some good shooters, they don't really have the type of athletes that, say, a Villanova does, or the type of inside game that they do, where they can put pressure on Kansas inside as well. So probably lean more towards, more towards Kansas playing well, but I don't think that, you know, Stanford really took advantage of the opportunities they got either. One quick note, it does look like, just based on Stanford's net rating coming into the game, that's probably going to be a quadrant one win for Kansas by the end of the year, which is something that I think when this was scheduled, Bill Self didn't really see that coming. So kind of a free quadrant one win when they kind of gave an opportunity to get one away at Villanova. So makes up for that. And you know, that's going to be a little feather in their cap come March and come the race for the number one seed, because they've got, you know, the Duke loss and the Villanova loss that were, frankly, I think both, you know, not to take anything away from those two teams, but both given away opportunities, and Kansas's resume was looking, a little sparse. Obviously, they're a really good team, but they were going to be in the position of needing to really rack up some big 12 wins, whereas, you know, now they just kind of have one less to get, and I think that this puts them back in the hunt for a number one seed in March.
Yeah, I think that does kind of sell some of their other wins a little bit short. I mean, I think the Dayton win obviously is going to be a quad one win. I think the BYU game could be a quad one win as well by the time we're all, you know, all said and done there. They have a very good non-conference schedule again. You know, the Colorado win is going to be a really good one for them. So it's not like they don't have a lot of good wins, but this is just kind of one of those extra ones. They don't necessarily need to worry quite as much. It's going to be that extra thing that I don't think, and most people expect a Stanford, you know, any Pac-12 team to be a good quad one win most years, you know, especially after the year that the Pac-12 had last year. So the fact that they were able to get this one, and it looks like Stanford is going to, you know, kind of stand up to that. It's like, yeah, the nation and like the media may not think of Stanford as a good team, But in terms of the way that they get evaluated for the tournament, I think that Stanford's in a really good position to, if not get a strong seed themselves, to at least help a bunch of other teams that beat them get a strong seed, you know, depending on how many teams that actually is. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be really good for them, and I'm definitely looking forward to all of that. So, all right, so let's go ahead. I want to kind of look ahead a little bit, but we need to take one more quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so we have just a little bit of time left here. Let's take a quick look ahead. You know, obviously the game coming up is this game against against West Virginia on Saturday to open up conference play. Kansas' first two games in conference play are both on ESPN Plus, which obviously has a bunch of people upset. You actually had tweeted something out about Jeff Long remaining tone deaf, and I'm assuming that has something to do with ESPN Plus. But your general thoughts on this particular game, whether it's the actual game itself and the matchup, or if you just want to rant and rave about ESPN Plus?
Yeah, well, so first, I think I owe you a little apology here about the non-conference schedule that you were talking about before we took the break here. Looks like Colorado, obviously Dayton, you know, I just kind of spaced that one out. But currently both the Colorado and BYU wins are quadrant one wins according to the net rankings. I think Colorado probably won't end up being one. I kind of think they're going to fall back to earth, but they're still going to be, you know, probably a quadrant two win. So the schedule is probably a little bit better than I gave it credit for earlier before we took that break. But as for West Virginia, you know, I mean, listen, I think it's pretty clear where I stand on, you know, I think Disney / ESPN is on its way to, you know, basically being a monopoly with them acquiring Fox and with them, you know, buying up the rights to all these sports packages. And I think if, you know, you expect ESPN Plus to remain $5 a month and to, you know, not have it be, you know, more and more of these games, you know, appearing on ESPN Plus, I think you're pretty naive. But who knows? Maybe this will be the first ever business with a conscience. but onto the, you know, onto the actual, you know, game. I think West Virginia been a lot better than I thought they would be. I think I predicted them like fifth in the Big 12 preseason or sixth, which is kind of, I think, right in line with where a lot of people had them. They've been pretty good. You know, they just finished a nice, impressive win over Ohio State. Should really probably be undefeated, but for a narrow loss against St. John's. Also have a win over Wichita State on a neutral floor, which Wichita State's been pretty good. So that's nothing to sneeze at. I guess I will say, you know, the one positive I think for Kansas in this matchup is they really match up well with West Virginia. West Virginia's backcourt is not very good, and Kansas, obviously, you know, Devon Dotson struggles in the Villanova game aside, one of the best point guards and one of the best players period in the entire country. So I think he's probably going to be able to take advantage of that matchup. They don't really have the, you know, insane turnover forcing pressing style that they used to. So that's going to be a big positive as well, where Kansas's lack of ball handling, I don't think, is going to hurt them this year as much as in past years. And then West Virginia, you know, they don't shoot a lot of threes. They're one of the least frequent three-point shooting teams in the country, and they don't make a lot of threes either. So they're going to have to score inside a lot against Kansas, and they're not even really an efficient shooting team inside either. They do kind of what they've done and kind of what I describe as those old, you know, Frank Martin K-State teams where they grab a lot of offensive rebounds and they get to the free throw line a lot. So that's kind of how they have to score. I don't think they're really going to be able to do that as much. And I think Kansas is going to be able to score enough on West Virginia, even though their interior defense has been very good. I think Kansas is going to be able to score inside, and I think they're probably going to be able to get West Virginia's two big men into foul trouble, both Jarrett Culver and Oscar, and I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, I apologize. Shibwe, I think. Shibwe, maybe.
I think
foul
that's right.
A lot. Okay. Yeah, both are over. Yeah. Both are over five fouls per 40 minutes. I think Cam's probably going to get them in foul trouble, and I think they're going to be able to take advantage of their reserves and just kind of, you know, score a little bit more than West Virginia will. And I think it's going to be a, you know, frankly, kind of a somewhat comfortable win, which kind of, you know, belies how good West Virginia has been. So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to be honest, without without my KenPom breakdowns right in front of me, I don't have a whole lot more to add. You kind of, all the stuff that I was able to gather previously, I think you've already talked about. So I don't have much to add there, but I do agree with you that this is going to be, it should be an interesting game. I don't expect any huge theatrics at the end like the last few times that, you know, Kansas had huge comebacks against West Virginia, because I just don't know that West Virginia can get up that big. Kansas should probably pull away at the end of games, but it will be pulling away to get a big win as opposed to, you know, pulling away in the last few minutes to have a huge comeback. So I do expect it to be a very entertaining game, a very good game, and I definitely am not ruling out the fact that West Virginia is probably going to have a really good shot at us when we go back out to Morgantown. But I do think that Kansas should win this one fairly comfortably. So, all right, real quick, before we run out of time here, for the Random Sports Minute, I normally turn this over to you, but instead I'm going to ask you a really quick question. You know, it is playoff time now here in the NFL, and obviously both of our teams, the Chiefs and then the Vikings, are in the playoffs. I want your general thoughts on the NFL playoffs. Are you as happy as I am that it seems like the Patriots' reign of terror is finally over? And how do you see the playoffs shaking out this year?
Yeah, you know, the Patriots thing, obviously not being a fan of an AFC team probably hasn't, you know, it hasn't bothered me as much as it would if I were a fan of an AFC team. I'm in the uncomfortable position of having to root for Kirk Cousins to win three road games just to make the Super Bowl. So I don't have super high hopes. I guess I will say, you know, I think if the Vikings play well, they can beat any other team in the NFC. I think, you know, the NFC top couple teams are a little bit overrated. So, but they have to play well, and I don't really trust them to play well. So kind of rooting for like a Bills-Vikings 0-4, all 0-4 matchup in the Super Bowl. But if that doesn't happen, I think I'll probably be happy with anyone other than the Packers, Saints, or Patriots probably winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so I mean, if I had to make my prediction right now, I'm actually leaning towards it being the Super Bowl we should have had last year in Chiefs versus Saints, but obviously, I know you wouldn't be very happy with that because that means that Minnesota flames out really early in the playoffs, which, while it's definitely a possibility, you know, I do think if there's any team that is set up to make an unexpected run, it actually is a team like the Vikings. I think that would catch everybody completely off guard. Cousins seems to be playing fairly well recently, and, you know, it's just a matter of can their defense stop other teams well enough, and they seem to have been able to do that somewhat. Obviously, I'm not counting the Week 17 because – you know, they weren't playing for anything, so they didn't really play anybody at all. So it should be an interesting NFL playoff. For those that aren't watching, why the hell are you not watching it? But it should be lots and lots of fun for those of us that do like football. So any other final thoughts before we get out of here for the night, Fetch?
No, I think we nailed it.
All right, so we will go ahead and leave it there. Once again, Fetch, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please do go out wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, any of those places. You can subscribe to us there so you get every episode as soon as it drops. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk, and you can subscribe there. If you can give us a rating and review at the same time, it'd be great. 5 stars, nice comments. We'd absolutely love it. But if for whatever reason you're unable to do that, please just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring this podcast to you guys for your entertainment, to give you guys all the information in as an entertaining way as possible. So if there's ever any comments, questions, suggestions, any guests you want to try to interview, anything like that, please do let us know. You can email me, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can contact me on Twitter, @rockchalkpod. You can, of course, interact with Fetch over on Twitter, @rockchalktalk as well. We really do want to interact with you guys there as much as possible. So, but we'll go ahead and leave it there. Fetch, thanks again for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.